Okay, here is a view of what the 3M family of optical discs are, so you can see how the CD-ROM fits in, and that we're working with mastering, and then we're working with replication on plastic substrates for the read-only discs, that is the video disc, the CD-ROM, and the OROM, or optical read-only memory. You're using a replication process in which the information is recorded on these microscopic pits, whereas in write-once optical and erasable optical media, you're creating a substrate, and the drive is going to be writing the material directly on the disk. You are preparing a surface so that you can then record directly on it. May I have the next one, please? Once again, no, that's okay. I can see that that's the most popular slide. Here we go, home base. The CD-ROM is a one-sided spirally configured disk which plays in CLV mode, that is constant linear velocity. You, the customer, send the information to 3M on 9-track magnetic tapes. During mastering, this information is first transferred to a rigid disk. 3M then adds the sync, header, error detection codes, and error correction code bytes, according to CD-ROM specifications. This digital data is then recorded on a glass master as a series of microscopic pits and flat areas spiraling from the center to the edge of the disk. These pits are created by means of a modulated laser which exposes the photoresist coating on the glass master. Using 3M's advanced manufacturing process, disks are replicated from the master disk. A reflective coating is supplied which enables the CD drive to read the information with a laser beam. Next, a protective layer is applied. Finally, the disk is labeled, tested, packaged, and shipped. The process that 3M uses for replication is called photopolymerization, or 2P, which is easier to pronounce. It's a cold process, and one that is specifically designed to create astonishingly low dropouts and error rates. Since the replicates for CD-ROMs are stamped, they're turned out much faster than in real time. The CD-ROM offers one of the lowest attainable error rates in any mass storage medium. Advocates and critics sometimes dispute this rate. One that is going around in the trades right now, frequently used, is an attainable error rate of 1 bit per quadrillion bits. That is a 1 followed by 15 zeros. Data on the CD-ROM is stored in the ASCII format. ASCII refers to a widely used standard code in which particular alphanumeric characters are represented by standard combinations of 0 and 1. But you can also store still images on a CD-ROM. During the playback, a laser beam is focused on the reflective surface of the disk through an elaborate optical system that consists of a beam splitter, tracking mirrors, and focusing lens assembly. The drive detects the reflected optical signal as digital information. A second, quote, layered, unquote, error correction code assures the data integrity requirement critical in data processing applications. Because the disk is read by a laser, it's immune to magnetic fields and accidental erasure. Properly stored, it's also more resistant to rough handling than conventional storage media. Its other chief advantages, which we've looked at, are its removability and its ability to be quickly replicated. The CD-ROM weighs only 0.7 of 1 ounce. My calculation is correct. This represents a storage density of about 12 billion bytes per pound. Properly stored, digitally recorded data is permanent with no risk of accidental erasure. CD-ROMs are highly resistant to minor scratches and fingerprints. Since the head never touches the recording medium, there's no danger of head crashes and no measurable wear during normal operation. Capacity then, economy, and performance make the CD-ROM the logical choice for information distribution and application in many fields, which so far out in the market, those that have been done include computer databases, such as archives, indexes, directories, systems and application software, that is documentation and manuals for computers mostly. People are talking about, and there is one demo disc of a multi-mode program, which does combine high-fidelity audio with graphics and data on a single disc. And a large field which is coming into prominence now, which is dealing with professional information, information for the medical, legal, financial, statistical, and hopefully musical community. Let me tell you a little bit about pricing of these very lightweight and very small discs. At 3M, we have three categories of turn for a CD-ROM. We have a 20 working day turn, a 10 working day turn, and a 3 working day turn. The master setup charges are $4,000 for a 20-day turn, $5,200 for a 10-day turn, and $7,000 for a 3-day turn. The replicate prices for the discs range from $30 a disc for under 100 discs to $6 a disc for more than 5,000. When we take a program, we store the master for 60 days, and if you need storage after that because you think that you might be re-replicating your program, then there's a charge of $2,000 for a year. The reason that we charge for this is because if you don't want to have your master stored, we scrub the master and use it again for another program. The glass substrates that we use are the heart of the matter, so we're interested in their economy. A proof disc is available to you for $1,500, and the discs at the moment are shipped to customers in jewel boxes. We have already said that the CD-ROM is a read-only format. It inserts easily into the current microcomputer operating environment. If you already have a serious office-type micro, all you need to add is the CD-ROM drive, a controller interface board to link drive and computer, appropriate software, and a supply of disks holding the reference files you need. One estimate is that by the year 1990, two-thirds of all salaried employees will have direct access to a micro. The gross potential for CD-ROM systems thus appears stupendous, at least in those markets. Compared with magnetic disks, CD-ROMs are slow to retrieve data from a file. What we have here are mainframe-sized files which we're trying to process with a microcomputer chip. The CD-ROM is formatted in a constant linear velocity format. To get from any point on the track to any other, the laser readout must transverse every intermediate point along the track. This is not the fastest possible arrangement for finding and accessing files, but it's used because the CD-ROM is based on the compact music disc player. Magnetic floppy disk drives use a different arrangement known as CAV, or constant angular velocity, which is one of the formats that's possible on the video disc. Instead of one continuous spiral track, floppy disks are formatted as a series of concentric rings divided into equal-sized slices called sectors. The floppy disk read head can hop and skip rapidly from one location to another by switching directly from any given track sector to any other. File access times using this technique are intrinsically shorter than any other method can attain. The O-ROM, by the way, is also configured in a CAV, or concentric system. For the CD-ROM with its spiral configuration, then, the choice of a retrieval system for you, the customer, is one of the very basic facts. If we can switch over to the overheads at this point. And if I can return the microphone.
Formatting system, what are you going to do? your first job in choosing the retrieval packet, which will be suitable for your primary purposes, find and feed the information that's going to be on CD-ROM. Then you have to prepare data on a 9-track magnetic tape. And then you have to evaluate the finished product, if it really fulfills the functions that you have. Then you ship off your disk or your tapes for mastering and replication, and depending on the term that you have selected, you simply wait for it to come back. We began to master and replicate CD-ROMs only on Fulda in 1985, so for all of us that represented that, we don't have it. It's a learning curve. But currently, what we are accepting are 9-track ANSI labeled tapes, and they can be blocked in 20, 48 clumps. You can have them from a 1-4 in each section, so up to 8 million of data in a block. One CD-ROM can have a maximum of only 16 files, and the files may cross tape boundaries. We can't accept ANSI, we can't accept ASCII or ESDIC languages. When we add the correction codes, the sync, the header, and the error detection code. When you send the tape to us, this is the information that's on it. We need to know the beginning of the tape marker, the volume labels, the file header labels, the tape marks, the file section, etc. And finally, I just want to show you again, to summarize, a schematic of what the manufacturing process is about. You are sending us your material on tape. We are making a master, and then we are making replicates from that master. Are there any questions? Yes.
I mentioned that you were presently shipping in jewel cases.
Yes.
Though you might be reconsidering for some reason.
A lot of our customers don't like the jewel cases. Some complain that it's too like audio discs and they don't want that confusion. After all, if people are selling the CD-ROMs commercially, they're charging a lot of money for them and they don't want someone to see it and say, aha, it's an audio disc. And sometimes they're difficult to open. We're looking around for other alternatives.
Okay, second question, do you have any information on shelf life?
Well, the shelf life ought to be indefinite. One can't prove that yet.
We try.
Many of these have been around since the middle of the 1970s, so now we're dealing with a 10-year period. There's never been any problem with any of the early discs, and it's the same technology.
The reason I ask is there continues to be vague rumors, at least in our circles, of video discs, laser discs, etc.
That's more than rumor, because there are examples when that has happened. It's due to an error in the manufacturing process. And we've heard of examples of that as well. Yes?
Well, you have a 2 years ago, we spoke, some representatives from Philips and Sony at the Audio Engineering Society.
Yes.
and specifically trying to find out, you used archivability up there, what the life expectancy of the discs were. And you're saying these are the same kind of fish, is that correct?
Yes, they are. They're exactly the same. I think that the often quoted figure is 10 years, because that is the period that exists at the moment.
Okay, when we talked to them, no one gave us anything more definitive than what you're saying now in terms of archivability. I'm not saying they didn't mean last million years, I don't know, but they was willing to commit the expectancy to it. And one of the things that also came up in one of these seminars from a totally different person in the audience, the doctor who represented the soldiers, is they said that the materials that we use, I'm not sure the material composition, was somewhat exotic. And the person that asked the question, how available are these going to be in the future? I mean, are we going to be using something that we can do for a short period of time and then may not have literally the natural resources to deal with? Or was that the person from Sony said that, yes, I agree, it's a little bit tricky. I don't know if you were just trying to say we've got something we want to tell you about. But they also seem to imply that the materials were relatively rare, some of the important materials. Is that true?
That's never a topic that I've heard discussed before, so I can't definitely say. I don't think that it's true, but I would like to go back and do the research. That's a line of reasoning that I just never heard.
Okay, it was mentioned.
Yes.
I think you can pinpoint it a bit closer by saying that the transparent material has to be extremely fine, high optical quality throughout. That requires the use of a sort of plastic, which sometimes is termed crystalline. And either organic vapors or time will, with time, release stresses which are built into this kind of material, which you find polycarbonates, polysulfonates, and so on, that particular style of plastic. And they will eventually raise in particular, the race going vertically down towards the reflective surface is something that the other correcting system cannot correct for, because the laser beam gets thrown out of phase. Now, I'm saying things that you probably never discussed, but in the repeated conditions, they may provide you with answers to counter better, perhaps, if they know better, counter better questions as to our capability than you can able to do today.
Yes,
you don't hit yourself. Yes. Nobody hits themselves.
Yes.
How far are we away from using the second side of the
accessory? Not going to be
used. Not going to be used.
There is no second side.
So one side it is. But the question is not illogical, because the video disc is two one-sided discs that are laminated together. Yes.
As I understand it, there is no standardized playback system for a CD-ROM, and indeed you can get any compact disc or audio, put in any compact disc player, and it will play.
There are two groups, one is called High Sierra Group and one is called MISO, and they are meeting, we're making meetings in the last couple of months to produce a standard, and it is to a lot of people's benefit that the standard be written, and there's a lot of pressure to come out with one. So either one or the other group is anticipated to create that standard. But you're absolutely correct. There is no standard, and there are differences between players. Is anything a play on player being considered? The discs themselves conform to a standard of sets in Sony set, and that is a standard, but it is the drives that we're talking about. Yes?
What interest has been expressed from book publishers for the kind of normative usage of this?
From book publishers?
Yeah.
That is one of the big markets that we see, and all of the big publishing companies are looking into it.
Do you have a time projection on that for the release of books on CD-ROM rather than
the encyclopedia? As Rob Muth points out, the encyclopedia is already one example, and that has been out for the last 3 or 4 months. There are other books that are out, but they're for internal kinds of uses.
Is there a time projection on the publication of novels and nonfiction books huge archival?
No, these are the current now is for archival or databases or things like that. Or in the case of Rollier, they're taking a chance and thinking that this will be a consumer product. So it's very tentative now.
and the use of novels or strictly entertainment reading is something that really is a long way down the road. You have to test the medium. It has to get out there and develop a market.
Excuse me, one second. We want to try to get Mr. Moose up, and then we can then you can ask questions of both Mr. Moose and Vivian, all right? Thank you very much, Vivian. Our next speaker is Robert Moose from Phillips International, and he will, I'm sure, be addressing many of the questions that you have in mind now or will want to ask later on.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. Good afternoon. I understand I'm the last speaker here, so I'll try to be as entertaining as possible, which is not always that easy when you talk about these high-tech products. But before I start, I have a question of you to ask. I would like to ask how many of you have a CD audio player already at home today? Wow, that is quite a percentage already, and it also shows that the market is still going to grow a lot, I think, because not all of you own one. And a gentleman earlier on, I heard him ask a question, what is the longevity of CD-ROM? Before I go into my presentation, I can assure you that the longevity of CD-ROM is really as long as you believe that there will be CD audio and CD audio discs sold in the stores, which I think is indeed for many, many years to come. If you indeed own a CD audio player and you have bought CD discs, then you probably agree with me that when you go back to your old LPs and the old gramophone, that it is incredible that you have listened to that quality for such a long time. Yeah, the last time I did it was for Christmas when I didn't have all my Christmas songs available yet on CD. You know, you listen to the old Jingle Bells, and indeed it is pretty bad if you're used and if you have been spoiled with the unprecedented quality of CD audio. So since CD-ROM is based on CD audio, I can assure you that CD-ROM is going to stay here for a very, very long time. How many of you in the room are publishers, by the way? Okay. Thank you. Okay. We are all starting with this, the compact disc, introduced in 1982 by Sony and Philips. Most of the research, I may add, was done by Philips, a large company in the Netherlands, about $23-24 billion in sales, and one of the largest consumer electronics companies in the world, and a company that owns a huge research facility in Eindhoven in the south of Holland, and many other research facilities in Western Europe and also in the United States. And already in the 60s, it became apparent that it was possible with the advent of the laser, when the laser was invented, that it was possible to burn very small holes in certain substrates. And with a little ingenuity, or I should say with a lot of ingenuity, people were able to convert that through a rather complicated process into music, and not just music, but in very, very high quality music. And Philips had learned the hard way from their experiences in, for instance, video cassette recording, which incidentally was another invention by Philips, that it is important to have world standards. If you have the greatest product in the world, but it's not based on world standards, you're not going to be very successful. And as a matter of fact, that impeded quite a bit the growth of the VCR because there were three systems in the world. You are only familiar with two of them, perhaps, the Betamax and the VHS, but Philips had their own system also in Europe. And that's not good to have three systems or two or more systems, because it means that people have to make all the material available on different formats. So Philips and Sony got together and they discussed this over and they said, let's stick our heads together, let's agree on the standards, and then let's try to sell it to other companies, and they were successful because the giant Matsushita company, which owns, as you know, Panasonic and other brands in the world, then later followed suit, and a world standard was born. And this was a remarkable success because today the compact disc, the compact audio system and the discs is the most successful product ever introduced. And I don't even have to use the adjective electronic or electric. It's the, there's no product ever introduced where the acceptance has been so fast and the popularity has been so enormous as the compact disc. So, of course, as the inventor of the technology, and you know, we feel pretty good about that because I am also, I can also tell you that our company has lost a lot of money with the video disc, which did not have that greater than acceptance, as we all know. So already this year, in 1986, in the United States alone, we believe that close to 3 million CD players will be sold, and we're only really in our third year of introduction. And also in Japan and in Western Europe, the CD is indeed an enormous success, and even today we have difficulty meeting demands, both for the players, that is, and for the discs. As you know, Philips and Sony pulled their licenses together, and we are licensing the technology to all the other companies that are in the market today, 55 or 60, I did not keep score recently, have signed up and have taken a license. Unfortunately, I think it's a little sad that most of those companies are Japanese and very few European companies, Philips basically the only one, and no American company has signed up. They have signed up, but are not actively making players, and only 3M and Sony are today making CD-ROM discs, yeah, the media today. So, we believe that, I didn't know I had this, this slide in here, it says, it's a slide in Dutch, it says, the rising sun van Philips, it talks about the rising sun of Philips. Little play of words, because of course we, when Sony and Philips set these standards, that was all nice and well, but then when we went home, we were basically competitors. So, but nevertheless, we are doing a very good job, and our players are better known in the US under the Magnavox label. But from the CD audio comes the CD-ROM. It is based on the same kind of standards that Sony and Philips set for CD audio. Because after the CD audio was announced, Philips and Sony got together again, and they published the so-called Yellow Book. And this Yellow Book is important because this Yellow Book is available to all the licensees, and the Yellow Book describes the physical format of CD-ROM. So again, we are talking here about a world standard, and I come back to that later on. As you probably have heard and read about in the papers, there has been enormous amount of publicity. You can hardly open up a computer magazine or a trade journal or indeed in the New York Times and Wall Street Journal, or you see references to this CD-ROM product, because people, quite frankly, are indeed mesmerized by this, tantalizing technology. When we first made presentations to the computer industry two and a half years ago. One of the first companies was Digital Equipment Corporation. And we came in and we showed them the disk and we said, gentlemen, close to 600 megabytes. They thought we made a mistake and that we really meant 600 kilobytes. No, it is 600 megabytes indeed, and Vivian already told you how much that is. If a secretary was busy from 9 till 5, 7 days a week, it would take her 18 and 80 words per minute, I think that's pretty fast, and accurate, then she would be employed for 18 years to type the contents on one of these little silvery platters. And that's, we don't want to do that, so we, through 3M and other people, we found better ways to replicate. There's, as you can see, some of the publicity made by them, and a certain hype has been created also for CD-ROM.